Okay, we've got a couple minutes here for questions to any of our panelists. And do you have a question, though? Okay. Now we can, we've got about 5 minutes, and we'll take a question to any of our panelists before we turn to our employer panel, and then we'll have another 25 minutes later. So any other questions for any of our panelists right now? Yes, Jen, right here in the front.
Thank you, Representative Ayalat from the 3rd Assembly District. Very impressive presentation this morning. I think you did a nice job of putting this together. I'm sitting here thinking, how do we get the rest of the world to get in on this? How do we, where is the attitudes that we need? How can we cultivate the attitudes? I mean, this is all great, but the dropouts, are we lacking in discipline? Are we lacking in structure? What are we doing? I think we need to go deeper on some of these issues to get us, you know, where you're suggesting we go.
I think you all have mics, right? They're all lavalier, so any of you can. They don't have to speak into a microphone, right?
Let me just say, I think there's following up on what Ron said. There's a lot of evidence. If you set up a high quality program, it really does work. Let me talk about the regional vocational technical high schools we have in Massachusetts that they set up to provide students really a thorough introduction to what it's like to have a career. So there's one in Worcester. Now, Worcester is the second largest city in Massachusetts. It's low income. 70% of the students in that school are living in a low income environment, half are minorities. And what they do there is they spend every other week in their career major, and they're insisting that those kids actually get authentic experience. So for example, the students study information technology. They actually run the help desk at that school. They're taking care of over 2,000 computers. They've handled 5,000 repair tickets, and they got rid of the IT support staff. They don't need it anymore. The students in graphic printing are doing all of the printing for the entire school system. And they got a company to donate state-of-the-art equipment so the students could learn how to work on that. In healthcare, they're making sure the students earn nationally recognized certificates, and then they're spending their senior year every other week working in the hospital, learning what it's like to be in the front lines of healthcare, and many of them are going on then to, all of them are going on then to post-secondary education and careers in healthcare. So the bottom line result is their graduation rate is 92.5%. That's, you know, far higher than the national average. We're losing about almost a third of the kids every year from high school. This is a low-income population. You'd expect the dropout rate to be much higher. It's 92.5%. They're doing better than the state average on the MCAS exam. Almost all of them are going on to higher education. So it's an example that if you take this approach of making high school much more real world, connecting it to employers, you can really make a dramatic impact on the dropout problem. And let me just say one last thing. There was a study done about why do kids drop out of high school. And the conclusion was, this was funded by the Gates Foundation, the number one reason, there's many reasons, but the number one reason was 81% said they dropped out because they found high school boring and irrelevant.
So I would add to that I think the acuteness of the issue is increasingly transparent and visible. The fact that we have these kinds of gatherings, the fact that Bill goes to half of the states and, you know, you'll continue to go maybe to all of the states to talk about this issue, the fact that we now have evidence that shows us what works and what doesn't work is building momentum in terms of addressing this issue in a different way than in the past. Because I think what's also important to realize is that the path to future success does not reside on building on activities of the past, but rather understand that the environment is changing, and for us to be successful in the future, looking back is not going to be the way to be successful in the future, but rather looking at different ways of doing it, because I think that evidence and data is clearly indicating that the current path and the current approaches are not working. And when we talk about, you know, the mismatches, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to pretend that we are in an economic cycle that is exacerbating a lot of the issues that we talk about. So, you know, the fact that we do have unemployment is not all due to a talent and skills mismatch. We are in a very difficult economic cycle, which is protracted, which is roughly twice the length of any other cycle in terms of getting people back into work than anything we've ever seen in our own service at Manpower over the last 50 years. And I think other than the Great Depression, longer than any other period for any sort of robust jobs recovery. So we are in new times. And to be successful for the future, I think the biggest point of emphasis is doing things the way we used to is not going to get us to the place where we want to be in the future. And that awareness, it seems to me, is increasing. When I talk to employers, and we had a very good comment earlier about having to have employers engaged, I see employers and companies and organizations engaging education systems on their own individually. It is anecdotal. We need this to become systemic. And that is when the whole dial can, you know, when that can shift. And in my work, in my charitable work for Junior Achievement, which is a volunteer organization that reaches out to 4 million students in the U.S., K to 12, I see the attention and the awareness from the public, from those volunteers, those are parents, 20,000 parents, essentially, that go in and teach in classrooms about entrepreneurship, financial literacy, and workforce readiness. And you're looking, you're seeing the increasing awareness of the issue that we have and the impact that this has for this nation's prosperity. This is not a, you know, a do-good activity with no certain outcome. This is correlated 100% to the success of every organization, every state, and us as a nation. When I look globally and I see nations change, I don't think really it's a matter of us having gotten worse, with the exception of high school dropout rates, which clearly is an area where we have, you know, we have regressed. It is mostly a question of doing the same thing and others accelerating ahead. Standing still is really going backwards. And that is, you know, that is the fallacy in thinking if only we could get back to where we were. Well, you know, getting back to where we were isn't going to be enough. We'll need to get much further ahead. And my sense is that through these kinds of forums, discussions with employers, discussions with people who look for work, their realization is that their lifetime employment is gone. No one is confused in the workforce that they will find a company whom they will work for 45 years. That is not what young people think when they enter. But they do think and they do know that they need the opportunities and the skills to be able to survive. And right now, we are in this transitional phase. And I think that is very important to recognize. We are in economic purgatory for lots of reasons, but we're also in a transitional phase where, you know, what used to work in the past is not going to be the key to success for the future. And that is a very difficult and also painful transformation that we have to undergo as we make this shift. But the positive side is we are probably better placed than any other developed country I know to make this transition. Most developed countries don't have the demographics. Japan's population is declining, and in the next 10 years, one worker will support two retired people. It's over. There is no job force growth, economic growth in Japan. Some say the last 20 years of Japan's, the lost decades, are some of it is based on excesses of the past. A lot of it is based on demographics. Population is declining, less people are working, and they're trying to make it up with productivity, and it's not going to work out very well. And that's really true historically as well. But we have demographics. We have a flexible system in that we are able to adapt to changes much quicker than other countries that have much greater rigor in their systems and who are not able to adapt. But we do have to adapt with purpose and clarity of future.
Can I mention one thing very quickly that I think underlies this problem of high school dropout? It definitely is a main contributor to poverty, to criminal behavior and so forth, and that is our families. We now have 25% of our kids in any given moment who are in single-parent family. About 40% of our kids are born outside marriage, 70% of black kids and 45% of white kids, and all those numbers are going up. And we have tons of research that shows that those kids are disadvantaged in every way. Now, we may not like that. We may think it's unfair. A lot of people say singling out, you know, attacking single-parent families. But the facts are the facts. And this is like a little motor that is driving up our poverty rates, driving up our poor school performance, driving up our school dropout rates, and I can't give you 1, 2, 3 what we're going to do about it, but this is something that's got to change.
Jen, did you have a legislative one? We got it. Oh, Senator Olson, Senator Miller, and then we're
going to
go to our employer panel.
Thank you. Luther Olson, State Senator. Just a quick one. You know, a number of people say that the answer to Wisconsin's economic turnaround is, you know, 150,000 more college graduates, or Gates is dumping a bunch of money in college completion. But what I'm really hearing you say today is our biggest problem is our increased number of high school dropouts for two different reasons. One, they don't get jobs, but the other thing is they cost us lots of money as a state. Is that really where we need to spend our energy, is making sure that we can reduce the number of our high school dropouts in this state that will really have the biggest bang for our buck? Because if that's it, I think we have sort of not acknowledged that problem in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think the high school dropout problem is the first order of business, in the sense that if you drop out of high school, you're obviously not going to be going on and getting any kind of post-secondary degree. So I think, you know, addressing that problem is a critical priority. I think you also need to really focus on, you know, maintaining and increasing the strength of the technical college system, for example, which for many years has been a model nationally that you have here in Wisconsin. That's providing the kind of post-secondary education short of a four-year degree that is going to lead to well-paying jobs in Wisconsin. So that's another vital resource. And again, I think trying to move away from the mindset that the only way to success is a four-year college degree. By the way, when you go to a four-year college, what you study also has a very important impact. And that Georgetown study I mentioned illustrates this. If you go to the University of Wisconsin and study philosophy, for example, it's probably not going to lead to that high paid a job unless you then go on to law school or something like that. So that's another factor. But I would agree that tackling the high school dropout issue and trying to improve the high schools is a first order of business. Yeah.
Okay, Senator Miller, and then we're going
to move to the employer panel. Thank you, Dr. Schneider. Once again, you've exceeded all expectations. Thank you. It's an excellent panel. We've talked, the subject was jobs for the future, and we've really addressed young people and how we get young people, how we can do a better job of preparing them for the jobs of the future. But we are also experiencing, we have this huge problem with people who are trained and have the skills who are currently unemployed and will be unemployed for a long time. The evidence shows that the longer you're unemployed, the harder it is for you to get back into the workforce because of employers' decisions regarding that. I'm going to ask you, since we have you available, do you have any observations or about how we might address the existing workforce and how we could perhaps help get the connection between a trained workforce that's unemployed and the needs of employers?
It's an excellent question. As I mentioned before, that we have structural changes in the workforce and with employers, and we have cyclical. So the cycles that we're in now have disproportionately lengthened the time of unemployment. And as you know, as soon as you go over 6 months of unemployment, your chances of becoming reemployed drop dramatically. After 12 to 18 months, it becomes very difficult. And as you have seen, for instance, in many parts of Europe, good unemployment is 9%, 8%. In large part, that unemployment is made up of a large part of people who have been unemployed and are unable to get back into the workforce. So one of the ways of addressing this structural issue, which I fear could be one of the reasons for structural unemployment, which is not only based on the education aspect we talked about earlier, but in immediate, is going to be our inability to find and retrain those workers and that part of the workforce and put them into gainful employment. And I think there the immediate approach has to be roughly similar to what we talk about from the ground up, but a much closer collaboration between employers and institutions and novel ways of enticing workers to get training for jobs that are available today. because there are examples of initiatives to retrain workers, but without a clear understanding of what the demand is. So there are many, many people who have been trained. Ron, you mentioned hairdressers earlier. There are many people who are trained to install solar panels in California. Massive investments in essentially, which is an electrician's job, plus some heavy lifting, because the solar panels are heavy, but not tied to an existing demand. So building to speculative demand is always dangerous. It may be attractive because, you know, clean energy is good, but the reality is we have excessively few jobs in clean energy as it is defined today. And that is a much bigger structural approach that you have to have. So I think that closer collaboration is really the only way that we can make sure that we get those people back into the workforce, because it is an asset that we have. I am somewhat more optimistic, though, because some of it is also cyclical. So that when the cycle comes back and the demographics start hitting, the demand for skills and teachable skills is going to increase, just because there'll be a mismatch between supply and demand. So make no mistake, today employers are extremely choosy. They will pick people who have the ability to do the job and probably can do half another job because they've got transferable skills, because they have no desire to hire anybody that isn't able to do more than they were in the past. So over time, as the economy improves over time, employers can't be that choosy, and they will then be more interested in and have to really tap into talent pools that are existing and that are trained. So I think that tie is going to be extremely important right now, but part of that is also an effect of the very difficult cycle that we are in.
Thank you.